if you don't know what you're looking for, you can't know if something's wrong. If you don't know what their normal looks like, you don't know what disharmonies look like.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. To help these athletes achieve their best potential while limiting the wear and tear on their bodies. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses. Today, we're going to be looking at a modality outside of massage, but which complements it really well, acupressure. Many equine body workers have either added acupressure to their education as a complementary modality, or have certified in it to use it as their main practice. And if you haven't, after today's episode, you may want to sign up for some courses. A clear difference is made between acupressure and acupuncture. We can't reiterate it enough for both those who listen as body workers and those who are listening as owners. Under all veterinary acts that I am aware of, and most definitely those in the province of Alberta, only a licensed veterinarian has the scope of practice to puncture the skin. That constitutes acupuncture. And there are many phenomenal veterinary acupuncturists who utilize that therapy for amazing results. It is always important for individuals to understand what each professional involved in their horse's wellness team is legally able to do when offering services to our equine partners. Acupressure. If you look up the definition of acupressure, Wikipedia says it's an alternative medicine technique. It is based on the concept of life energy, which flows through meridians in the body. Physical pressure applied to acupuncture points or trigger points aim to clear blockages in the meridians. Pressure can be applied by hand, elbow, or with various devices. So today's guest is Jessie McGowan from Ontario, Canada, who is herself an acupressure practitioner, as well as owner of Tallgrass Animal Acupressure Canada, and owner of Birch Animal Wellness. Jessie is certified in both small animal and equine acupressure, accredited by the Tallgrass Animal Acupressure Institute from Colorado. She obtained a Bachelor of Science degree with an honors specialization in animal behavior from Western University prior to starting her acupressure education. In today's conversation, you'll hear her describe how historically acupressure came to be. I found it fascinating and reflected on my own health battles where I've used both acupressure and acupuncture along with reflexology to ease discomfort, pain, or enhance the healing within my own body. If you haven't had a session yourself or are perhaps skeptical as to the benefits felt, I highly recommend that you book in a session and feel those changes in your own body. But now, let's have a listen to our conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Jessie, for coming onto the podcast today. We're super excited. In the future, we want to do some more collaborations with you. So we wanted to get you out to some of our listeners and see if you could tell us a little bit about what you're doing here in Canada, because it's new for this year. So can you just tell us about Birch and why you started it and what got you rolling with bringing this up to Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up with my mom doing natural health therapies for people. So I was actually exposed to it at a very young age. And I grew up working with animals. So I worked at petting zoos and horseback riding camps and equestrian riding camps for autistic children. So I had the background. And so I wanted to do what she did, but apply it to animals. So we started doing a little more research into how we can do that. And that ended up with me doing my degree in animal behavior, because there's actually only one non-pre-vet science-based program for animals in Canada. So that's where I got my background. And then as soon as I graduated, I started taking the certification classes, which were numerous and took me about 4 years to do all of them, or the ones that I wanted to do. Of course, there's always more. When you do a little more research, there's always more to learn, and stumbled upon acupressure that way and continue to grow it one therapy at a time.
What a great way to grow up as a kid with that. I was surrounded by all those animals. That's super. And what was it about tall grass itself? Can you tell us about tall grass? You know, what drew you to that particular program?
Yep. So Tall Grass Animal Acupressure Institute was originally started in Colorado. And there's two very wonderful ladies who own it. They put together the school after learning acupressure, and they went to traditional Chinese medicine school, and they wanted to work with animals too. So they started up that program, and they also started NAPCAM, which is we'll get to that a little bit later. But I flew down, I want to say 2015, and took their equine certification and then started working on the online. So the program is a combination of hands-on and online learning. So you cover theory, you cover anatomy, pathology, indicators, all of that kind of stuff. And I had so much fun with it. I had a bit of a delay because the morning after I flew home from that class, I got a puppy. So she was excellent company while I was studying and loved it so much that I flew to Chicago the following year in March to do my small animal certification. So I'm actually dual certified in both equine and small animal. When the lovely ladies who own Tallgrass Animal Acupressure Institute decided that they wanted to step back from teaching, they asked one of their students from each of the major countries, because they have a lot of international students, who wanted to be an affiliate. And as of now, I'm the only dual certified practitioner in Canada. And I was so excited about it. And they knew that I already ran a business. So I had kind of the background in order to do that and all the admin and tech that's required. And so I was so excited when they reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to do it. I jumped all over it. And here we are.
Oh, that's fun. And what was it about their teaching style or that first course you took that really kind of lit that fire to know that this was a path that you wanted to come into?
For me, the first day when I showed up, there was probably 30, 35 people. And it was at this huge ranch that had an indoor space for the small animal learners and a huge farm for the equine students. Just seeing how engaged all the students were in learning. I've taken a lot of classes in my day, but to see that many adults keeping their attention on what they're saying, the content is so engaging. There's so much to learn. It's an entirely new language. When you learn traditional Chinese medicine, there's just so many terms to learn. And I have always loved learning. I was one of those kids that loved reading and writing, and give me more readings to do, more textbooks, it's fine. I don't mind. It's just been so, the instructors, first of all, Amy Snow is one of the primary instructors, and she, just the way that she teaches, everything is so intricately related that you learn so much, even just by talking to her for 5 minutes. Like, okay, that totally changed what I thought I knew about this, and now I need to go learn more about it. So it's a very engaging topic.
Whenever you have passion for something, and obviously you do have passion, so that's great.
Yeah, that is fun. What a great key, Kim, that to think of that passion, because otherwise, you know, the energetic is lost. You know, that maybe brings us right to our next question for you, which is, you know, what do you think are important qualities when, you know, you're looking to train in acupressure, you know, what should people look for when you're either looking at a practitioner to work on your horse, or even for, let's say there's some body workers out there that are thinking maybe it's something they'd like to look into?
I think people with a body worker background already have a lot of the necessary traits. One of the most important, I would say, is being very observant, because if you don't know what you're looking for, you can't know if something's wrong. If you don't know what their normal looks like, you don't know what disharmonies look like. which is a whole other conversation. But diligence is probably a good one too, because you kind of have to be very patient working with animals. Of course, you know, but a lot of people or students that we get are either they have a background in working with animals or they don't. And if they don't, they're, you know, like, oh, I really love dogs and I want to learn more about them. But it takes a little more practice and a little more, you know, working around animals for people who haven't worked around animals before is usually a new experience. Absolutely joyous and so much fun. But again, it takes a lot of responsibility, being very aware of your energy and your body language when you're working with them is so important, because they pick up on that more so than people, for sure.
Yeah, they absolutely do. We feel that from the body work and obviously the acupressure, even maybe more so. Can you maybe just take a few minutes and talk to us a little bit about acupressure itself, the history of it, but also touch on the difference between the acupressure and the acupuncture, if you don't mind?
That's a very common question. I'll start with that one first. So acupuncture and acupressure are both forms of traditional Chinese medicine. And for those of you that have heard of acupuncture before, you know it usually involves needles and putting them into specific points on the body to release or stimulate that point. There's such an intimate connection between the points, the organs, the meridians, that you can work a point on the foot that actually affects, you know, the forehead or the eye. There's so much intricacy between them. Acupressure itself is a little newer. More so, it was originally founded, acupuncture, during the wars in China. So they noticed that when animals and people, the soldiers, were struck or pierced in certain parts of their body, that ailments that they'd had for years suddenly disappeared. And then they started to figure out and map where they got hit to what their ailments were, and started to notice, you know, hey, the liver point is actually, you know, on the leg, even though the liver is in the torso. Mm-hmm. So they started to track all of those. And while it spread to humans quite easily, and a lot of traditional Chinese medicine doctors will know a lot about meridians, that the extension of that to animals seems logical to people who work with animals and who know a little bit about body work and energy work. But a lot of people kind of took a little longer to apply it to animals, in the same way that a lot of human-based therapies took a long time to get to use with animals. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are different regulations on that. The primary difference is that acupressure, you're using your hands instead of needles. So you can feel the disharmonies and the intricacies similar to other forms of body work, because at least for me, because I practice both science and psychology, like behavioral-based therapies, that it's easier for me if I can physically interact with the animal, mm-hmm. and feel what's going on, observe their behavior, that kind of thing, rather than putting needles in them and waiting and coming back. Acupuncture absolutely is a wonderful therapy too. But personally, because I'm so energy driven in terms of therapy, that I find having my hands on them works a lot better.
And I guess another point to just reiterate here, we often talk a lot about scope of practice. And I know on your website, from looking through it, you guys also are very much involved in that regulation base. So acupuncture, of course, anything piercing the skin, would also be with outside our scope of practice that involves veterinary care. And I'm assuming at the tall grass, is that something they're very specific as well about talking about? Is that distinction?
Yes. So we have an entire part of the class that we talk about ethics, scope of practice, what you are and are not allowed to do. And I'm in Ontario. So in Ontario, only vets are allowed to practice acupuncture.
Here in Alberta as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So my students know that. A lot of my students are actually vet techs. So they're like, we have a lot of the training, we know that we're not allowed to do it, but we still want to be able to help. So acupressure gives them a little more leniency in that way. So in terms of scope of practice, we learn specific terms we can and can't use. We actually work in tandem with a lot of veterinarians We know that there are what are called contraindications when you cannot do a session. And a lot of them, we recommend go see a vet first or go to an emergency hospital and get that animal looked at before we even come near you, because we want to make sure that they're getting the best care possible. And that quite often involves a whole team of us,
yes.
You know, with the vet and the farrier and the saddle fitter and all that. So we want to make sure that before we do anything that the vet has had a look, and quite often the blood work will be helpful for us. Some of the students we have a nutrition background, so they can interpret, they can make other recommendations, but typically we will recommend that they go see a vet first. For example, in the case of open wounds, we don't recommend beginner practitioners to work on pregnant animals, any lactating animals, any with serious chronic conditions such as cancer. We like to keep it nice and straightforward for them. But beyond basic contraindications, our scope of practice is that we do not practice veterinary medicine. We work in tandem with them and quite often are supervised by vets when we work on those animals. So we like to make sure that it's a team effort, but the students definitely learn what they can and cannot do. So for example, when we're learning, when we work on the animal, we don't call it a treatment, because that's a veterinary term, according to the College of Veterinarians of Ontario, which is the regulatory board for Ontario. So we use the word session, because treatment is a veterinary term. So there are several other sets of terms like that, but they know that we don't treat. Some people are washy on the word assess, but we like to use observation instead. A lot of our pre-session work involves observation, listening, smelling, seeing what's going on, feeling the body for hots and colds, any disharmonies, that kind of thing, observing their gait, their movement, their personality, that kind of thing. Definitely scope of practice is something we like to drill into our students.
Well, and I think that's such a good point, because, you know, when we look at that team approach, that's something we're doing all the time in our practices here. And I think that's also why we wanted to talk to you, because not only does the team go with veterinarians and the body worker, but it also goes in between body workers, where, you know, someone that's based in massage like myself and Kim could speak back and forth to someone like yourself. And, you know, we could really make the best program for that animal to be able to thrive in either sport or even if it is just a friend or a pet. So I think that that's really great thing to think about. And I think anybody that's out there listening to this, that is hearing these words and has a body worker that's working with them, that has said, oh no, you know, we don't need to involve another person, we don't need to look at other avenues, I think maybe that could be just a bit of a red flag, because I do believe really strongly in the team approach and that everybody's coming together. I think you made a small point that we could maybe expand on just a little bit. What kind of feedback do you get from veterinarians or farriers or saddle fitters or any other team members that you're working with in your practice in regards to the acupressure and what you're trying to help the animal with?
It's been very well received so far. I find most people haven't heard of it yet, so they're a little bit skeptical. But once they see you working, because quite often I'll be working when the other practitioner shows up to do something else, and we can work in tandem. So for example, there was a miniature horse I was working on that had issues with his feet. So they had the farrier over. And so I was there anyway. So I offered to do some points for relaxation to help him stand better, because he's a fairly anxious horse. And the farrier said he's never had an easier time doing that horse's feet, because he's always been trying to pace and get out. And that was the easiest time he's ever had. So sometimes it's just sharing between the practitioners. Like, I have a whole database of other practitioners that I can refer to for things like chiropractor, massage, K-taping, laser, any of that kind of stuff. And having saddle fitters and farriers, and there's a vet at one of the farms that I go to that we work in tandem quite often as well. And it's really nice to see people coming together and kind of being willing to share. Usually it's points for, you know, circulation or anxiety or that kind of stuff that I share with people just to kind of help them with their sessions. Because horses are definitely a lot bigger than working on, you know, a small little terrier. Mm-hmm. So it's easier if they cooperate and are nice and relaxed during their session.
Yes, nothing worse than a session. You don't have a horse that wants to cooperate for sure. So speaking of sessions, can you maybe take us through what does a session look like when you get called in to look at a horse? What would that look like?
Okay, I can give you an example. So at the end of when I was doing my certification program, you have to do case studies. Mm-hmm. And one of the case studies that I did, a friend of mine has a horse and he was bonded to this other horse. They'd been together their entire lives, moved to three separate farms, always together. And all of a sudden that horse passed away of colic. The horse that I worked on, he wouldn't eat. You couldn't get on him. He wouldn't let anybody on him. And he was isolating himself from his herd. And the lady knew me through mutual friends. So she called me and asked if she could be one of my case studies. And I said, yeah, absolutely. I would love that. So I went out and she brought the horse in. She walked him around for me so I could kind of get an idea about physically how he was doing. Without giving too much away about the process of acupressure, you do an assessment at the beginning. So you look at how they're standing. Is their muscle tone good? How do their eyes look? Are they bright? Are their teeth good? Are they grinding a little bit? Is their coat nice and shiny? Are they standing straight? Are their feet in or out? That kind of thing. You look at digestive noises, any kind of breathing. We like to get a base rate. We look at if there is some there. We like to look at their manure to see how they're processing their food. We like to get a history of that animal. And quite often with rescues, you can't get all of that information. But history in terms of their medical history, if they've had any injuries or surgeries, what they eat, how often they exercise, what type of exercise, like if they're a sporting horse versus, you know, a school horse or a leisure horse. And then we look at feeling their body gently for anything that feels unusual. So horses' body temperatures are usually pretty consistent. But if you're feeling in one area is really hot or really cold, it'll give us a little bit of idea about that. And then we open the horse up for energy. So typically this is literally called the opening and you trace the bladder meridian three times on each side of the body. And then between the shoulder blades and the top where their tail is, there are what are called association points. And you feel them to see how the meridians are doing. So each one, and for those listening, you're not going to be able to see this, but for purposes of demonstration, between the shoulders and the top of their tail, there are what are called association points. And each one is associated, that's where the name comes from, with a meridian. So you can feel them to see, is it sunken more than usual? Is it hot? Is it sticking out? Is it cold? There's all kinds of different temperatures. Sometimes they're really soft and squishy. It'll give you an idea about how that meridian is doing. And then based on that, we can choose points that will help to rebalance that system. So in this horse's case, the horse's name was Newt, as in the lizard. He had a lot of disharmonies with his lung. And in traditional Chinese medicine, the lung is associated with grief. So because he had lost his friend, his immune system was shutting down. He was isolating himself. So I started working on some lung points for Newt. And after, I think I did about 3 to 4 points on him bilaterally, meaning one on each side, and gave the owner some instructions on what to keep an eye out for, see if his behavior changes, let me know if he's eating, that kind of thing. Don't try riding him yet. Just kind of do some walking in the arena with him. And she called me the next day to tell me that he had already eaten his dinner and his breakfast and that he tried to initiate play with one of his herd mates.
Oh, great.
So we went back for a follow-up a couple of days later and did one more. And after that one, the owner was able to ride him again. So he was back to his normal self. But that's a general session about how it works.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Isn't it great to have that rainbow and sunshine time where you you know, you can really see that you're helping, facilitating change for another being. I mean, that just gives you goosebumps and makes you feel warm in your soul. I love that story. What if you were going to say, as I was listening to you talk about that horse, if you were going to give maybe 4 or 5 tips to owners to think to themselves, why would I have an acupressure session done? Could you give us a little example of maybe some tips or a little kind of checklist type of thing where people would know that acupressure maybe was the right modality to choose at that time?
Yeah. So one of the wonderful things about acupressure is that it works both with physical issues and behavioral issues. Quite often it's a combination of the two. So one of the most common issues for horses that I tend to work on is injuries. So if they're running in a field or they hit a fence or something like that, and one of their legs is sore, there's a lot of therapies you can do to help. But sometimes with the limbs, because there's a lot less muscle in some of the areas around the joints, it's a little bit stiff. There are a lot of acupressure points that can help with that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, if they have a specific area that is sore, like for example, the shoulder, you can work points around the shoulder without directly touching the shoulder, which makes it a little more comfortable for them. Digestion is probably a really common one. If they're deciding not to eat, they're eating too much. If their manure is weird, when it comes out, not the right color, not the right consistency, any kind of resistance in their behavior. So if normally they do, for example, jumping or trail riding, and all of a sudden they don't want to do it anymore. Lack of interest in behaviors is one of the more common things. Any change in behavior, really, if the horse is pretty consistent and decides all of a sudden they don't want to do something or they're afraid of something, usually if there's an incident, like for example, the horse got spooked by something and then they have a fear or anxiety around that trigger, also really helpful for that. Quite often, a couple of points will help bring them back. And one of the great things about it is there's 361 points. So there are so many to choose from and they're easy to show. Like for example, if I was working on a dog with anxiety, I could show you a point at the end of the session to use that if your horse decided that one day that he was really anxious about this and you were riding him, you can just get off and do the point and bring him back down before you get back on. So it's all about our safety too, right?
Well, and that's a great way to also maybe check in a little bit about, obviously, as a person that's doing the session, you yourself have to be balanced. Not only are you trying to balance the animal, but you and your body need to feel balanced. What do you do? What are some tips that you can share in terms of attaining that balance before you go to work with an animal?
There's a couple of things for me personally that I like to do. One of them is I go for walks in the forest with my dog. We live in an area here where there's a lot of trails and it helps ground both of us. I think she gets out all of her energy and I can ground really well. I like to do yoga. That's something pretty basic. It helps also keep me limber because there's usually a lot of bending and stretching involved in body work. Meditation's helpful. Journaling, any kind of just having conversations with friends, making sure to schedule those in, because when you get really busy, sometimes you forget to look after yourself as well. I find those the most important. One of the things we do teach our students is how to ground themselves before they do a session to make sure they're not bringing their drama or whatever's going on in their life into the session, because that will affect their energy in the session and the animal will pick up on that.
That's a great point. I love in there that you brought up a little bit about community, which would be a grand next question, not just for yourself with your students that you're bringing forward, but what is the bodywork community like where you're at, and how do you network with other bodyworkers, maybe either on case collaboration, but like also just on, you know, the woes of like you mentioned, when we first got on before we started recording, that you had a huge snowfall and, you know, it's freezing cold here in Alberta. Like sometimes it's not the rainbow and sunshine of heading out to the barns every day. So tell us a little bit about the community there and what you do to try to stoke that fire.
The body worker community here is slowly growing. It's definitely a fair size bigger than when I first got certified. a lot of the practitioners that I know actually took the original certification course with me in Colorado. So there's always a couple of Canadians that decide to fly down and take the course. The majority of them are Americans, but there is a couple. There's one in Ottawa and there's one in Toronto that I like to reach out to once in a while to check in with them. Sometimes we do collaborations with them and just talk about, you know, how acupressure is looking in our area down here and that kind of stuff. I find there's a lot of more social media than there used to be, and that ends up being a pretty good tool. So I have an Instagram account for both Tallgrass Canada and Birch Animal Wellness. So I have people reaching out to me on there and, you know, they're saying, you're following this account, here's some other ones you might like. And I find that usually the people are very like-minded in that way. So it's an easy way to meet new people. I find even going to events. So there's it's a pretty big course area where I live also. And usually, I mean, without COVID, there's a lot of eventing and tournaments almost for all kinds of different equine sports. So it's an easy way to meet people. We also have Can-Am that's always hosted in the fairgrounds pretty close to my house. So it's nice to go and meet other professionals there. There's also a lot of dog events. In the summer, there's a couple of really big ones in Toronto that are really nice to go to. They have, you know, agility trials and all kinds of other stuff. I have an Australian Shepherd. So it's nice to go and take her places, meet other people who are similar minded. But I kind of get that nice balance where I live of both canine people and equine people.
That's super to have that kind of community around you that you can continue to grow as well and pull from different modalities and support each other. But the support you talked about in regards to the association with Tallgrass, and you mentioned this briefly, and if it's maybe we can chat more in depth right now about the actual association. Now you have a name for it. I say NBCAAM. Yeah. NABCAM?
Yeah. We call it NABCAM, yeah.
Okay. If you don't mind chatting to us about that, because I think associations definitely is something that Tina and I have very much strong beliefs in, as well as a lot of body workers out here in Alberta, is that we really need to have that group of like-minded individuals to not only grow individually, but grow as an association, grow as a community, to make people aware of what body work is for horses and that scope of practice we talked about and everything. So can you explain to us about your association and what they do for body workers?
Yes. So NABCAM, it stands for the National Board of Certification for Animal Acupressure and Massage. And they cover both basically North America, so the US and here. When you finish a Tallgrass program, so there is an affiliate also in the States. When you finish our program, you're automatically eligible to write that exam. And when you write that exam, you get a certification card that says you're a certified member for either small animal or equine. There's two different exams. It's a pretty extensive exam. It covers, you know, anatomy, pathology, a little bit of kinesiology, theory. It'll give you case studies. Say, if the horse is this, answer these 8 questions about what you would do or which point is more appropriate. But honestly, I found the exams really straightforward because I was already dual certified through Tallgrass Animal Acupressure, that I've done both species. I've done the whole program twice. I'm like, okay, I know what I'm doing. It's really helpful. They basically have a board and they have meetings to help to increase awareness about different types of body workers and different types of qualifications for body workers, trying to affect local policy in terms of getting more awareness to the public, but also talking to the veterinary boards for the different groups to help to make it a more collaborative effort, which I think is helpful because a lot of people are like, well, that's great, but if I can't, you know, work on this type of animal or that type of animal, or I have to work in these conditions, then I don't know if I want to do this. And then speaking to those people at the groups, they're very helpful in answering a lot of those questions, especially for first-time practitioners, that it's very reassuring to know that there is a community of people out there that are fighting for the animals, even not just us, but yeah, fighting for their access to complementary therapies.
Yeah, and appropriate complementary therapies as well. And in regards to that, what about insurance? Is that something that MCHEM also very much promotes?
They do promote getting liability insurance. There aren't a lot, specifically here, I don't know so much about the states, that actually do cover acupressure. There's a couple of insurance places, and I do have liability insurance. Can I remember the name of the provider right now? No, but there are some that do cover working with animals. And there's actually, at least in the case of mine, because I also teach it, there's a separate section of the forms you have to fill out, because if you're teaching it as well, it's another, I don't know, couple hundred dollars or something for to be able to teach. But it's not expensive to get liability insurance here for acupressure.
It is something that's really important, I think, for body workers to acknowledge and look into for themselves. And it's also from the owner's perspective important, because if you have somebody coming to work on your horse and they're not insured and accidents happen, and you then as an owner don't have any kind of recourse as well. So something's for everybody to be aware of for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think, not to just jump in on that point, but just for owners that are listening, you know, if your body worker doesn't have insurance, a lot of times it's because they don't have enough education and the insurance company won't cover them. So always a good question to ask when we're having these open conversations with such a fantastic professional like Jesse. It's really important for people to be thinking about that.
When you're doing a session, what do you feel underneath your hands in terms of the points, the meridians, the association points? Do you feel, is it like an energetic kind of zing? Is it a dimple? Is it like, can you explain a little bit to people listening what underneath your hands you're actually feeling?
I love this question because my students always ask the same thing. If you don't have a background in body work or any kind of energy therapy, you're feeling over going, okay, the bones are all where they're supposed to be, but I don't know what I'm feeling for. What am I supposed to feel? And most often it's a temperature difference. So if you know their average body temperature, okay, this spot feels a little bit warm. This one feels a little bit cold, but sometimes it's, this spot is harder because you can also feel and compare it to a nearby spot or the spot on the other side of the body to see the difference. But usually it's a temperature difference. My background is science, but I also did Reiki certification. So I kind of know what feeling for disharmonies feels like. And usually I have my hands actually on them, so it's easier to feel. Sometimes it's a tingling in one area for me. Sometimes it's, I'm going along and my finger dips because the spot is actually sunken and the skin isn't tight there, and only in that one spot. So it really depends on the practitioner. I find some people feel kind of like pricks on their finger. Some people feel tingles. Some people feel just the temperature. It's a lot of practice though. Mm-hmm. I find usually my students get frustrated when they don't feel the differences right away. And then I'll find a real stark contrast, like, okay, feel this and then feel this. Do you feel the difference between the two? And mm-hmm. I find, especially those that know anatomy, it's a little bit easier because you know when things are not feeling the way that they're supposed to be feeling.
Right.
Good. Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, you can really hear the passion in your voice when you speak, Jesse. It's really neat to always hear a master talk about their trade. What makes you as a practitioner want to get up every morning and go out and see horses? Like what, and dogs? Cause like, as you said, you're multi species. Like what is your why? What makes this just so fascinating for you?
I think the biggest part of it is seeing the animals when I come back, the difference between them. Quite often it's the owner where they're saying, you know, I was really sad. I was worried I was going to have to put my dog or horse down. You know, I'm not quite sure how you did it, but now they're, you know, walking perfectly normally, or this is happening. And just the joy on their face is reflected in the animal because now the animal's, you know, feeling better. That's what it's all about, right? Mm-hmm. Helping them get back to the way that they used to be is, it fills my heart with happiness.
Yeah, I love that. And so what would you say to owners when they have seen something that they have kind of normalized within their horse or dog? So that's one of the things that Kim and I are really big on is, you know, people kind of get to that stage where they say, oh, that's just old Henry. He's always like that. Mm-hmm. And we're always trying to educate people to really look at, no. That just because it's been like that for so long does not mean that that's normal. Can you give us just a little bit of your thoughts on that and kind of how you address that with clients?
I think a big part of it for me is that because I have my background in animal behavior, we learned all about body language. And if we know what behaviors are normal for each species, and if they're exhibiting something totally unnatural for that species, or even something unusual, or that, you know, breed or that type of horse, that it's obvious to practitioners, usually more so. But I find just explaining to them, I was like, well, typically this behavior is presented when the animal's feeling XYZ. So it's likely that he's experiencing, you know, some anxiety or discomfort in this area. Do you think we should look at it? Is this something you want to pursue? But in the end, the owner has to be willing to being open-minded to it, because working with animals, and I'm sure you experience this as well, that quite often the behavior or energetics of the owner is reflected very well in the energetics of the animal.
Yeah, that's a great point to make. And not, of course, that, you know, we'd be in that blaming way, not that you suggested it that way, but it is always good to, you know, be open enough to see those things in your horse or dog to allow you to not only be open to getting them treated, but maybe there's a little window there where we could look at our own wellness practice, kind of like some of the self-care things that you had mentioned earlier. I think that's really neat. Can you leave us, if you were going to leave our listeners with kind of an especially important thought that you have, something that, you know, just comes up so often for you and you really want people to start to understand?
For horses specifically, I think knowing what their normal gait looks like is really important. But the more observant you are, meaning the more present you are when you're with your animals, the easier and more quickly you can tell if something is wrong. And of course, the faster you get that issue looked at or helped, the easier it'll be to resolve, which is why I think there's so many chronic issues nowadays, because people are like, oh, I'll get to it. Oh, it could be normal. Who knows? And then, you know, months later or years later, the issue's still there because nobody's ever actually addressed it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's brilliant. So Jesse, we're pretty excited because you and I have started talking about maybe bringing you to the West when we're able to see people in person, or maybe even doing some online things if the pandemic keeps us apart. We're really excited about our Expand in Hand collaboration program that we've been doing with other professionals, but you've got some great things online. Can you tell us what you're offering for people right now?
Yes. So our online program for practitioners, you can either take part of the program if you just want to learn a little bit, or you can finish the entire program and become certified, entirely up to you. We also offer both small animal, which covers dogs and cats, and equine, so they're actually separate, but there's a lot of overlap. So if you do decide to become dual certified, you don't have to retake the entire program, just a couple of the classes that are different. So our course sequence is Overview of Traditional Chinese Medicine, which is an online class. Then there's an introduction to animal acupressure, which is a 2-day hands-on. Then we have Meridian Theory, which is back to online. Our second hands-on is called Meridians and Specific Conditions. And then the rest are all online. We have Introduction to 5-Element Theory, Acupoint Classifications to learn all about the different categories of points and when to choose which one, Energetics and Landmark Anatomy. So this one is usually the more complicated because you have to learn all of the important bone structure and muscle landmarks. Pathology, Indicators and Assessment, which basically you learn what to look for and what it means. And a Proficiency Verification, which is basically just a really fancy exam where you film yourself doing certain things and answering certain questions or showing us where points are. And we grade you and it's a pass-fail. But that is the general gist of the program. There's also monthly webinars we're doing now because obviously we're not allowed to teach in person yet. To kind of keep the ball rolling a little bit, a lot of our students took classes just before the pandemic and want to keep up with their learning, so it's an easy way to do that. Or they start taking more onlines to get ready for the next hands-on class.
Super, Jesse. Thank you so much. Yeah, and we'll keep in contact because we really honestly do want to see if we can figure something out for you to come. You know, we'll keep working together.
We appreciate your time. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
This was such a great conversation to have, and Jesse is such a keen individual. Her passion for acupressure and holistic modalities definitely shows through. The Tallgrass Animal Acupressure Affiliate she runs here in Canada is relatively new. So if you want to give them a follow on Instagram and Facebook, you can hear all about the upcoming webinars that they are hosting. Be sure to check out those social media feeds or have a look in the show notes for her websites. I'll post them there as well. And as Tina mentioned, we're also looking at bringing Jesse out to Alberta as soon as we can when restrictions ease. So if you are an individual interested in potentially joining us for one of these courses, be sure to send us an email at office@inhandtherapy.com or send us a PM. If you haven't already heard, we also offer a variety of continuing education on our online platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com, and in-person content is listed on our inhandequinetherapy.com website, as well as social media, of course. There is a ton of content and a wide range of information for body workers and owners alike, so be sure to check that out. And I can't end this episode without giving a huge shout out to each and every one of you that has been tuning in. I was blown away with the support shown in season one, and since the start of season two, which is only a couple of weeks ago, you guys have once again shown me your enormous hearts, and I cannot thank you enough. This podcast truly is a labor of love. So I really appreciate seeing how many people from around the world are listening. So thanks so much. Thank you for listening to the episode. I appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast and ask that you please share it on social media and with your friends. Reach out to the social media pages on Facebook and Instagram under Equine Body Talks to know about upcoming episodes and to connect with me if you have areas you'd like to have discussed or guests you'd like to listen to. All of our episodes can be found on my website at KrebsEquine.com and our Equine Body Talks YouTube channel. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.